What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a Fredita!
Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Iconic or listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We certainly do appreciate your support. And we can't do it without the help of our sponsors, of course, Honey Colony. We had Miriam Hinnan on. She is the founder of Honey Colony. She is the director of Vanishing of the Bees, and she has a phenomenal business that sells all sorts of products, anti-aging, body care, facial care, home and garden, bee-related items, which is pretty cool. If you've got somebody, we're coming up on Christmas. If you've got somebody in your life that's having a birthday, go to honeycolony.com and check it out. You might as well. They've got all sorts of interesting things. If you've bought the same thing for your spouse for 6 years in a row, you're going to get stabbed unless you bring up your game a little bit. So go check Honey Colony. They've got all kinds of things available there. Use the promo code MACRO. Save yourself some money and support a small business in the meantime while you're at it. Well, we got Benny Wills back from Joy Camp because there has been so much to talk about in 2020, as everybody knows. So, Benny, how are you?
I'm great, Charlie. Can you hear me all right? I just had a little notification saying my mic wasn't working.
Your mic works just fine.
Great. Zoom was lying to me.
How dare they lie to you like that?
I'm doing really well.
So what's
good
new?
To talk to you. What's new?
What's new?
I'm a father.
Yay!
As of 4 weeks ago, actually, as of 10 months ago, I mean, I've been a father this whole time, but the baby finally emerged 4 weeks ago, and now I'm officially like a dad of a person that I can see and hold. And you were one of the first people to ever know that he was going to be in existence.
That is true.
This is like a full circle thing for us.
I was not in the room for that part. I just found out about it after the fact, right? When you guys approached me,
I didn't tell you right there in the moment.
No.
Oh, I know what happened. So we were
in conversation. About to go on stage though at Anarchapulco.
Exactly. So for people listening, this was at Anarchapulco back before the world absolutely blew up. Right before the world blew up in February, and I was emceeing. So I was on call the whole weekend, and Sonia, my wife, took a pregnancy test that she got from Walmart and turned out that it was positive. And she came down to tell me in between, you know, on a break, and we were in conversation, Charlie and I, and she told me, but we decided not to tell anybody in the moment. So I felt bad. I like left the conversation with you and then had to circle back later. I was like, I think I have to tell Charlie since I just left him high and dry to go cry and celebrate with my wife in my very brief break before I had to get back on stage.
You're like, oh my God, this is exciting. All right, hang on. Come into the stage, Ron Paul. You know,
exactly. And I was like quivering on the stage. I was like, hey, welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back. Did I just piss my pants? I feel like I did.
Yeah. And then it's been really strange because about what, 3 weeks later is when everything really went insane with the virus.
The thing.
So her pregnancy and the insanity of the world directly paralleled each other for the entire time. So as she got more and more pregnant, the world got more and more crazy. And so I was witnessing these two worlds. It's like the most amazing thing and just this absolute nightmare. And it's been a really strange year as a result. It's been an absolute contrast.
Yeah. What a juxtaposition of your perspectives on things. It's like you look out and you turn on your computer or you turn on your television and you see all the awfulness and insanity of the world and the fear and the rioting and all that. And then you look at the greatest thing in the world. You've got this amazing wife and this new child that's on the way and everything positive and hopeful that's coming. And boy, what a contrast, huh?
Yeah. And it helped ground me throughout this whole, we didn't know that it was a boy until he was born. So the baby and the idea of his life and existence was grounding me throughout the whole process because it's a rather concerning and confusing time. And knowing that he was coming helped me feel better about things because I know that he's here right now for a reason. It's not a mistake. He didn't come at a bad time. He came at the perfect time. And that's exciting to me and makes me feel more empowered and less scared and more determined and focused to make sure that he is protected and safe and, you know, a leader of the next generation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fascinating concept. You know, it resets this clock that we have and, you know, we all go through our lives and we say, oh, I'm halfway done or whatever. Well, but when you have a baby, then it just starts you back go back to the starting line, like you're playing Monopoly and you got to go around the board all over again, because now it matters how you leave this world, because even though you're gone, you have kids and you know that are going to be living in it. So everything, as if it wasn't already important, it just, everything gets magnified in the importance. Like, we've got to figure this out. We've got to figure this insanity of the world out, because otherwise we're going to have kids growing up in a dystopian nightmare, and we can't have that. So I can understand why it could make you nervous and apprehensive and all those things, but I could also very much understand how you could come out of this extremely motivated to make sure that things go well
and focused, and less scared, I guess is a good way to put it. More confident and fearless. I mean, it's amazing how in 4 years, so in between these election cycles, I met Sonia in 2016, right before the election. Mm-hmm. So from when Trump won that election until this election, I've gone from being, you know, independent person in LA trying to figure out life while being an actor and like only fending for myself, mm-hmm. to being married, not having a baby, and being responsible for a family unit. Crazy how much can change in such a short period of time. And I'm like far, far away from Los Angeles and from that industry, and thinking about how I can, you know, zig and zag with whatever's to come. And it's just a crazy time. And also acknowledging, like, since he's been born, I'm thinking his childhood is going to be so different from mine, and sort of wrestling with that. Like, it's real, that's ultimately good, but man, what is his childhood going to be like? It's going to be nothing like what I experienced.
Well, he's going to have two great parents. I know that. So he's going to start off with a tremendous advantage that a lot of people don't have, that, you know, grow up in shitty families and things like that. So he's already, you know, in the right spot. Now, what this world looks like, that is yet to be determined. But you talk about this baby making you less, you know, fearful and things like that. And then, but you do the thing that is, to most people, the most fearful thing, which is public speaking. You do that. You have done that for a living, for a very long time. So how did you navigate the fear of that, of that first time you get up on stage? And I've done a little bit of it, but nowhere near what you've done with poetry and with hosting in Acapulco and hosting Red Pill and countless commercials and 20 years as an actor. You get on that stage and most people crumble out of fear. You've found a way to sort of harness that and use that to your advantage. How does that all work?
True. Yeah. Well, experience really helps. Like you just said, I mean, I did spend 20 years as a stage actor and being on stage and conquering those fears. But I think that I have a few tips and tricks that I rely on at this point. And my most basic ones are nothing that happens on stage can go wrong. Nothing is wrong that happens. That's a really important one for me, so that I accept that anything that might happen is okay. It's a part of the experience. And as long as the audience experiences me experiencing that in the moment and not trying to control the situation. So if the power goes out, the sound goes off, if I get mad, they're going to see someone who's getting mad. But if they see me going, well, this is what happens, they feel more relaxed because I'm accepting it like they're accepting it. It's just something that happens. So nothing that happens on stage is wrong. That's an important rule for me. And the other one is just remembering that it's all just a ride, just an experience.
Yeah.
Not everyone's going to love you in anything you do at any point in your life.
Yeah.
So getting over the fear of what people are going to think, it's huge, because no matter how awesome you are or how amazing what you produce is, there's going to be someone out there or people out there who won't like it. So accept that. You're not going to please everybody. You're not for everybody. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, just remembering that you do have people that love you. There are people that I have friends and I have family who are going to love me no matter what. Even if I bomb on stage, even if I get tomatoes thrown at me and a big cane comes out and pulls me off stage, mm-hmm. I can tell that story when I get home. Like, can you believe it? Like, I bombed so bad, they threw tomatoes at me. Right. Like, I don't know. It's just about rolling with the punches and not taking it too seriously.
Yeah, it's kind of a nice, you know, metaphor for life too. You know, not everybody's going to do the best you can. Know that people are going to love you. Joe Rogan and all those comedians talk about bombing and how horrible it is and how you grow from it, and that it's a natural part of comedy, and you're going to try some things that don't work. That's life, right? You're going to try some things in life that don't work, but you're going to bomb in life sometimes. But getting over your fear of it, getting over your fear of public speaking, getting over your fear of learning how to communicate with other people. This is important. And in 2020, I mean, what we have seen that's been rampant is this, like a silencing, like a trying to control the narrative, control the topics of conversation, control the words that people are saying, and you're working on a communication workshop that you've built out that's really phenomenal. I come from a background, I also am a co-owner of a sports media company that got professional athletes ready and trained to go in front of cameras for interviews and public speaking and things like that. So I get it. I understand the value of this communication and how it's imperative for getting your thoughts across. In 2020, we've seen sort of like a stamping down on this communication. Like, you're not allowed to say this. You're not allowed to talk to that. You're not allowed to be on this platform. What are you working on? Tell these people this project that you've put together. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
What is it?
Well, like you said, I mean, communication, I feel right now, is more important than ever. The ability to communicate. We need to be able to communicate. I think that one of the byproducts of what we're experiencing from the internet, whether on purpose or happy accident for the, you know, the powers that be, is people are no longer listening to each other on all sides.
Yeah.
So people are polarizing themselves and just writing people off because their communication abilities aren't working like they used to. I think it has a lot to do with like online communication in general, but communication is really lacking. So we are discarding people and losing people that we care about because we are too frustrated to be able to communicate in a way that works. So yeah, I spent the majority of this year working on something that I think can help people. I finally, you know, I've been contributing what I think is valuable work for a long time through comedy, through poetry and whatnot. But I've really always wanted to do something that's really of service, that can empower people. And I finally, through some conversations with Richard Grove over at Tragedy and Hope, he really helped me see this, that I have something to offer, and that is the ability to communicate freely and boldly. So I've created a course called Parhesia, which means exactly that. Parhesia is a forgotten word from our lexicon that means to speak freely or boldly, or in other words, freedom of speech. And as someone who has been speaking on stage and performing, and always as an actor, as a stage actor, as an on-camera actor, as a voiceover actor, as a poet, as an MC, as someone who just goes on YouTube and talks, I have a lot of communication tools, and I can consolidate everything I've learned from 20 plus years experience into 8 to 10 week course and empower people with what works for me to help them go out into the world and communicate better, to help build those bridges back to friends, family, loved ones who they have a hard time talking to, and to bypass what the powers that be want, which is us divided. How to not let that divide us anymore and actually communicate again and build bridges, like I said, back to each other so that we are able to hear each other again. Because that's what we need more than ever. We are being intentionally divided in all kinds of ways. And I feel like I have developed a real curriculum and tool set to offer people to, fight that off, to fend that off, and to communicate with expert ability.
Yeah, it's a process. It's like they say it's a muscle that you have to practice and work on. And we're all communicating in some way or another. A lot of nonverbal communication and things like that. But people don't have a lot of practice with it. They just sort of dismiss it, or they think, oh, maybe it's not that important. I'll give you an example from my sports company that I watched, like, with my own eyes in front of me, and it was such a testament to the power of improving your communication skills. We were in a meeting. This was 2003, and we had a meeting with Carmelo Anthony's agent and Carmelo and his team. They came in, and my business partner and I were going to show these guys how we do our communication workshop. We're just give them an example. So my partner Steve, who has an acting background, very similar path to you. He said to Carmelo, stand up here in front of this room, and I want you to just tell me about a subject in school at Syracuse that you took, just a class that you took where you thought that the teacher was, you know, in your opinion, your least favorite class. So he stands up there and he starts doing all this, you know, he's slouching and he's crossing his arms and he's, and he's explaining this. He's trying to explain about this class, how the teacher doesn't really care for him and thinks that because he's a star athlete, he's just coasting through and all this stuff. But he's having a hard time. He's very uncomfortable with that. And then Steve motions to me to give him a basketball. And we're in like a boardroom, right? So Steve throws Carmelo a basketball, and he goes, tell me a little bit more about that. And so as soon as he had that basketball, he stood up straight, his posture changed, he felt more comfortable, and he started painting this picture of the classroom structure and that what the teacher was saying exactly, how it made him feel exactly, why that hurt his feelings, Steve took the basketball away from him, and now he's standing up straight, and he's explaining this thing, and I look over at his agents, and they are looking at each other, and they're like, Oh my God. So this was a small example, but it was one of those things where it was like, this is the same person. We didn't sprinkle magic fairy dust on him. We just got him comfortable in a comfortable position, which was with a basketball in his particular case. And it changed him. It changed him physically. He stood up straight. It changed the words that came out of his mouth. And we watched this. Now, I knew that improved communication skills will benefit people and will work. But man, when I've watched that with my own eyes, and we were maybe 2 years into this company, which has been around now for 20 years, I saw that as like a great example. It's like, this actually works. And the things that you're talking about, what you're doing, it actually works. And it is so difficult to quantify improved communication skills. Like, how does that, how do you put a value on that? How do you measure that? But you just know that when your communication skills improve, when you get more comfortable, when you get better, when you get that basketball in your hands, the words that come out of your mouth, the impressions people, other people have of you change drastically. And so, boy, if 2020 was anything, it's an advertisement for people to get prepared for what's coming. It is also an advertisement to get people communicating with each other, because it has been taken from us this year.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why, I mean, I spent about the last 5 or 6 months working on this, developing it. I had a test class that I did it with, and I'm possibly more excited about this than anything I've ever embarked on. And I've embarked on some pretty cool stuff.
You should, because this is perfect.
Yeah. Cause it's a tool. It's a tool set. It's something that I can offer people, and then they can go off on their own and utilize, and then actually, you know, change the world on a small scale somewhat, I guess, person by person, or on a large scale. Cause not only is this a way to talk to people, but how to find your voice creatively, which is a huge one. Part of the course. But back to what you were saying, that example, I would say that that's not a small example. That's a huge example. You know, that's a perfect example of how you can not only get the guy into his comfort zone, but take his focus off of what he was worried about or whatever. You know, he was obviously like uncomfortable because he's doing something that's outside of his comfort zone. So to take the focus off of that and into something that he does feel comfortable on, that's what makes the switch. And that's the thing. Most of the breakthroughs are so subtle. It's a subtle shift. And that's where I think I'm really good. Cause I also, in addition to all the performance stuff, I was a teacher for years and a director. I can work with people. So the course is very hands-on. So I work with you directly. You bring what you have, and I'll work with you. And the class gets to see what subtle adjustments will do to enhance someone's entire persona. Their charisma comes out. Their confidence comes out. It's really amazing. And then at the end of the course, which is an unexpected surprise for me doing the beta version, was that people are producing works of art, like real works of art. Everybody has creative potential. And to utilize your voice in a creative way oftentimes makes it so it's easier to be heard by other people. So if you can harness what you want to say and the points you want to make and filter it through a song or a poem or a painting or whatever it is, that's so powerful, probably more powerful than a conversation. That said, I can also help with conversation techniques so that you can talk to your mom, you can talk to your sister, you can talk to your high school best friend and not get into a really emotional argument, because that's where they want us. They want us worked up and arguing and emotionally invested in these topics that really don't have that much to do with our actual lives. So anyway, I'm very excited about it, and I'm really hoping that it takes off.
You should be excited about it, because this is something that is paramount to people. And you don't have to be in the communication business to need this either. I mean, in my particular case, we focused on athletes because that was where we were coming from and that was what we were doing. But we were very well aware that the skills that we were teaching these professional athletes worked across the board on a variety of people in all walks of life. So communication skills, whether that be helpful for your interpersonal relationships with your friends and family, obviously a lot gets lost in the communication there. I know I've been in the doghouse before for things that I've said that came out the wrong way and I didn't mean it that way, but maybe there's a better way of expressing myself. Beneficial in business, for sure. The people that are able to communicate their point effectively are looked at as leaders. They're promoted. I mean, this is just common sense type stuff. But, and of course, you know, a lot of people say, well, it's beneficial if you're in the sales environment too, which, you know, we're all in sales. Let's face it. I mean, if you've been a single guy, you're in sales, you know, on some level or another. But so to have an improved communication set of communication skills, boy, it's overlooked, I would say, by a lot of people. A lot of people are fearful of it. They're afraid that they're going to be put on the spot or made to look silly, or they're going to say, reveal something about themselves that is embarrassing, or somebody in the group will laugh at you or anything. Give me an example. So talk to me about some of the things that you do in this course for people that something that they could expect if they want to get involved in this.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's broken up into categories, I guess, or sections. So there's three main pillars of the course. One is conquering that fear of stage fright, not just so that you can, you know, someone reached out to me recently and said, I'm not worried about being in front of a crowd. I'm like, well, that's okay. But having those skills will help in all facets of life. So just because I'm not trying to get you to get on stage, and because who knows how many opportunities we're going to have to speak in front of crowds moving forward. But sure, having those skills to be able to do it and to conquer whatever self-doubt or self-consciousness you have, fear of rejection, whatever it is, will help you in other ways. So conquering stage fright, and not only conquering it, but how to be interesting while you're doing it. That's a huge one. So you can conquer the fear and be totally forgettable, but I can give you the tools to not only conquer it, but be someone who is engaging to watch and interesting and who you want to listen to. And beyond that, another big part of it is how to speak to friends and loved ones about difficult subjects, how to not be a conspiracy theorist, if you will, yeah, and how to build those bridges, how to heal relationships, how to talk, you know? And then the other big part of it is how to express yourself creatively. Like I said, how to find your voice and apply it towards a masterpiece. Because I think that we all have a masterpiece inside of us. We just have to tap into it and find it. And I can help pull that out of you. You know, and there's lots of other things along the way, but those are the three major pillars. I have all kinds of stuff about how to build confidence, how to overcome fear, self-doubt, and all kinds of exercises so that you can feel comfortable speaking. Because going back to what you just said, a lot of people are afraid they won't know what to say. Like, that's such a common concern. They're like, what if I don't know what to say? So they try to like plan ahead, especially in conversations. They tell like, okay, I'm going to have like my ammo ready. Like, I'm going to have all these facts and these details ready. So then I go in, but then you're not in the moment. Then you're like hoping you can remember what you planned, and then it becomes awkward, and then it's not authentic, and you're not speaking from the heart, and you're not able to articulate what's real. But if you're telling the truth, you don't have to worry about the details because you're telling the truth, you know? Yeah. So anyway, it's awesome. I'm really excited about it. But those are the main points.
I could have used the second one a while ago, when how to not sound like a conspiracy theorist. When I
we all could at some point.
Yeah, I made the mistake of bringing up 9/11 at Thanksgiving dinner one time, and and that is not the place for it. And especially when you don't have your argument together, like I didn't back then. And so I've had to battle that. I think a lot of us have. I think a lot of people that are into this, these sorts of alternative topics, have had to have this conversation, or at least we feel like there are people in our lives that are sort of judging us for having these alternative thoughts and things like that. And that can be, boy, it can be, first of all, it could be just awkward and annoying, but it could be much deeper than that. And what we've seen in this political landscape, of starting with the election of Trump and up until this very moment, dividing families based on how you feel. And this is devastating. I mean, really, what are we doing here? And so, a workshop where you can get yourself put in a bet. I mean, I've learned a lot about how to try and deliver this unusual information in a way that doesn't come off as sounding like I'm completely and fully unhinged, maybe partially unhinged.
Yeah.
But that's taken me a long time. If I could have ramped that up and had like a way of understanding all of that in a shorter period of time, like through a program like you're offering, I think I would have been on board with that. That could have saved me a lot of embarrassment, humiliation, frustration, and all those things. I'm coming to the conclusion that though it does not get the credit that it deserves, having an ability to communicate effectively might be the most important talent that we either have or do not possess.
Obviously, I couldn't.
You're going to agree with that more. I think.
And as they also clamp down on censorship and they keep silencing people who are just bringing up other points of view, it's going to become more important than ever to be able to communicate, well, in general, but specifically in person. And that's something I also emphasize, is if you want to talk to somebody whose opinions don't align with yours, don't do it online. Unless you absolutely have to, but if you can avoid an online debate, avoid it. because I think that's one of the traps. Social media is an absolute trap for communication. It's teaching us to be poor communicators because we're just using, we're like hiding behind the keyboards and not experiencing the give and take of an actual conversation. And they become link wars. Like, I'm going to share this link and I'm going to share this link. And then you end up blocking the other person. And then it all ends in a, you know, you unfriend someone you've known for 20 years.
Yeah.
Is that really solving anything? Do you feel better about that? Well, if you had a conversation, it probably wouldn't end that way necessarily. But yeah, it's really important, really, now more than ever. And I learned how to communicate in that way from trial and error, like you just said. I mean, I've been on this journey of questioning reality for a very, very long time. I mean, my conspiracy guy character on Joy Camp came from actual experience. I was making fun of myself because I was the turd in the punch bowl way too often. Because it, you know, everything feels like the most important thing, and when people are misinformed, you want to enlighten them, and it often backfires because people, if you don't bring it up in a way that they can hear it, you're just going to look crazy, and you're actually going to put more distance between them and the truth. So you have to find a different way. And I can, after 15 years of figuring it out, I think I'm qualified to teach people how to do that.
I can certainly attest to how not to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
I've had these conversations with people, or I've had in the past where I've just verbally vomited on somebody, and it makes it a one-way street. It doesn't open it up for a two-way dialogue. It's me telling them everything and not listening to them have a rebuttal or anything like that. So I have over time have had to develop this method of if I'm interested in having a conversation about a difficult topic, like some conspiracy related topic with somebody that is not into that sort of thing, I've had to devise my own little tricks, such as asking them questions about, like, hey, what do you think? What do you think about this sort of thing? What do you make of this situation with the vote tabulations and this, and instead of saying, I'm going to tell you something, this is the way it is, and this is, blah, blah, blah. Nobody wants that. Everyone just instantly puts their guard up and they just go, no thanks, crazy guy, I'm done. Yeah. But watching all of the Joy Camp videos, and for those, if there's anyone still that hasn't caught the Joy Camp video, what is your problem? You need to check this out. They're fantastic, but you play the role. You guys sort of encapsulate all sides of this argument. You've got the conspiracy guy, who's enthusiastic about these things. You've got these other people that are sort of naysayers, and you create these little scenarios that you guys film in these short clips that are fantastic. And yet all of us watch it and go, ah, I was there. I fully relate to that. Yeah. That's me. Or that's,
I get that comment so much.
Yeah, it's almost like Joy Camp, and the things that you put into that was like the precursor to this new project, you know?
Absolutely. Well, Joy Camp emerged from wanting to figure out how to communicate. So when I figured out how I could, I could utilize the skills I was acquiring and had already from being an actor and pursuing a career in Hollywood, and Kevin, who was an editor and a writer, we finally realized, like, oh, wait, we can apply these skills towards speaking truth.
Yeah.
It was such an obvious click because that was a way to, communicate better. We used comedy. And then, of course, it evolved into poetry and whatnot. But something you said made me think, about conversations with people. You have to remember or realize even that people generally don't want you to teach them anything. It's really important. We have our own, for whatever reason, we have our egos built up where we, if someone threatens our intelligence, it threatens our identity. So you have to be very careful because people don't want you to change their mind by and large. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with new information replacing outdated information, but mostly people don't want their intelligence threatened. So they don't want you to be the one who changes their mind, who makes them think differently, because they're on the defense. You have to find a way in. You have to let them find a way in so that they think they learned it themselves.
Ooh,
that takes some finesse.
That's a trick.
It's not as hard as you think. It's not as hard as you think, but you have to, asking questions is a huge one, but find the way. You basically have to figure out a way to open the door and hope they walk through it, but not shove them through it.
Right.
You know, because they don't want you to be the one that made them think differently about something. That's just an inconvenient truth about reality. And yeah, we have to accept them. Once you accept that, then you can start being creative and figure out, well, how do I get them? And then being okay not taking the credit if they do change their mind. If they end up learning about a subject you were hoping they would, and they don't remember that you're the one who planted the seed, that's okay. Because now the seed's been planted and it's germinated and now they're thinking differently. You've done the right thing. You've done a good job. Success, even if you never get the acknowledgement, you have to be okay with that too.
Yeah. How much of our lives are controlled by fear? The things that we say or don't say? How do you quantify the self-censorship that's happening? You know, that somebody is these days are afraid to say what they really think. Like, boy, that's a devious component to this whole, well, I'd say 2020, but I'm sure we've been experiencing that from before. But fear, the role of fear and how that shapes the things that come out of our mouth or don't come out of our mouth, man, that seems like if you can find a way to sort of process or maybe not overcome fear, but at least not let it
tame it. That's one of the things I talk about is taming the fear. Because you may have, I still get nervous when I go on stage. I've been going on stage since I was 7 years old, in front of large crowds. And I still get that like fluttery feeling. Sometimes I want to run away a minute before I go in front of the crowd. It's about how to not only tame that, because it's not about pretending it's not there, but how to also turn that into something that you can utilize. Yep. So it's energy that's applicable and not buried. But to say that you can just completely overcome fear, I mean, sure, I think fear is healthy because fear can also save our lives. So fear is a necessary aspect of life. But all too often, our fear of failing, our fear of what people will think about us, those kinds of that self doubt, that kind of fear is what keeps us stuck and also allows for our way of life and our freedoms to be taken away. Fear is huge, but it's not. But it's also important, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It keeps you sharp, I guess. We've seen in 2020, especially the silencing of dissenting voices and how devious that can be. You talked a little bit about social media and how this is. Do we have social media all wrong? We're looking at this as a way to communicate and connect us with other people, but is it not in some ways disconnecting us from other people as well? It's not maybe the most healthy aspect of our current society, is it not?
Yeah, I go back and forth on what I really, you know, what I think the actual intent of it is or was. I wonder sometimes if it's all part of like, it's all unfolding exactly the way they wanted it to,
right?
Or if it's like a happy accident for them that it's so divisive and it's such a tool of like separation and misunderstanding. Cause most people they're just misrepresented in their own conversations online. I can't tell if it's a byproduct or if it's the intention. But I do think it's regardless, it is fundamentally destroying our ability to communicate communicate effectively, and it's being used against us. So now, I mean, I was just talking to my friend yesterday about this. Like, now what's happening? So if someone were to, because of the censorship, now those of us who have been doing this a long time and we have our resources and we can keep track of like where the alternative platforms are and stuff. If there's someone right now who is waking up, like this, let's say the second lockdown, they're like, what is going on? I'm over this. Like, what is going on? They're not going to know where to look because it's all being scrubbed. That's scary to me. So as me 15 years ago, I'm like, what is Freemasonry all about? I could go to a number of websites easily or just type in a simple search into a search engine and find information that would help me understand whatever question I had. And now that's being systematically removed and scrubbed. So where does that person go who's a newbie who wants to have perspective? There is none. You go on YouTube and you type in a question to like counter the virus narrative, you're not going to get it. You're only going to get people telling you that that's all crazy, that's conspiracy, dangerous, which is why they have to censor it, have to take it down. Yeah. And how are they going to find? I don't know. These are the kind of questions I think about.
Yeah.
Which makes it all the more reason why we should, you know, have to keep our communication skills sharpened and keep finding ways to get our content out there and seen and not lost because they want it gone.
They certainly do. They've done a very good job of silencing dissenting voices. They've tried to make it, if they can't discredit, if they can't deplatform us, which they usually can, they just try to discredit us or make us look like, you know, tinfoil hat wearing lunatics, even though we're calmly and rationally having a conversation about some of the inconsistencies with the official story on things or the official story about the way the world works. I don't find that to be particularly conspiratorial, just like a normal conversation. But I guess if you're talking about things that are inconvenient to the establishment, they would prefer that you shut up. So it's we've got self-censorship working against us. We have overt, outright authoritarian censorship working against us on the by the social media companies. We have fragmented communication happening on social media when we are allowed to communicate. It seems like they have made a decision that the best way to break up this this challenge to the authority structure that is currently in place is to make sure that none of us are able to talk to each other. What a diabolical thing to do to try and silence voices of people, just a collective group of people. What a shitty thing to do to somebody.
Yeah, and that's what's an obvious thing about what's going on with, you know, the narrative this year and what the steps that they are taking. To keep, I mean, even social distancing, to stay apart. And yeah. Now with these lockdowns being reinforced again, I mean, we're, you know, here in Washington, which I'm sure it's very similar most places, so that we are not together, we don't gather, so we don't have these conversations in person, stay at home, so that the only information you're getting is coming from your TV, your computer, or your phone, where there's censorship. So the information is very, very, very controlled. And it's just, you're going to be in a constant feedback loop, reinforcing whatever narrative you're buying into. And that's obviously intentional to keep us away from each other. And not only that, but on a spiritual level, we are supposed to be with each other. We need to be together. That was one of the, that's like the first simple and obvious yet profound observations I had holding my newborn son. Was he absolutely needs me. If he didn't have Sonia and me, he would die. And all of us are here right now. We're having this conversation because someone or some people made sure that we didn't die. Like yeah. we are all the products of someone, of people caring about us enough to make sure we grew up. And so therefore, a part of who we are is dependent on other people. We need each other. We need to be together. It's why people get depressed and kill themselves when they're lonely, because they desire company. So even if you're an introvert, I bet you still wish you had a friend, or you have a friend that you talk to. You know, it's in our DNA, the need to be together, the need to lean on each other sometimes and work together and be together. And this is so diabolical that they're separating us physically, but that really affects us emotionally, spiritually, and it's absolutely evil.
Yeah. And when we do get together and come together for a voice, this year it's been out on the streets with signs and the proverbial torches and pitchforks and things like that. And it's not even very, you know, you might feel part of a group in a sense, but it's not very warm and inviting. It's more of, it's just aggressive and anger and all of this stuff. It's complaining about what's going on. Is there anything wrong with us complaining? Is that healthy from a communication standpoint? I mean, I'm sure there's got to be a line at which, you know, the complaining is a bit too much, but I'm wondering if our desire or our need to complain is a way of sort of purging bad energy out of us or something.
I think complaining is just, you know, it's a little bit misdirected. It's a little more, you know, the complaint is fine, but the complaining is maybe not the best way to express your opinion or your feelings on it.
Right.
But I think that, you know, with the protests, and we have to stop asking for our rights back from these people and just saying no. I mean, that's the ultimate solution, is just be like, no, we're good. Don't need this shit. And that said, I ultimately think all this is going to fail. I think the new world order, globalist, et cetera, whatever you want to call it, agenda will fail because it's so anti-human and the human spirit cannot be stifled.
Man,
for too long. I think it might be, you know, we might see some, actually, I think we're probably definitely going to see some more pretty outrageous stuff, but ultimately this will fail because it's too out of alignment with what life is supposed to be. And the human spirit is too dynamic to be absolutely suppressed to that level and oppressed to that extreme for too long. And they're pushing it so hard now, like the pedals to the metal, they're going so hard. It's like they're ramping it up so much that I think it's going to run out of steam, but maybe I'm just an optimist and I have a newborn.
Well, as soon as I asked that question, the first thing that was going through my head was that it seems like an anti-human agenda. And those are the exact words that came out of your mouth, is that anti-human. And considering we live on a planet, not just humans, there's a lot of different diversity, but to try and get a planet filled with humans to live in a society that is anti-human is like trying to cram a square peg into a round hole. And collectively, we just, it's incongruent with how we want to behave as a society. It just seems destined to fail. And like you yes. said, it seems like they're ramping it up and the insanity. Like if people are out there going, oh, these lockdown orders, these don't seem right. They don't seem rational. They don't seem to, it's like, yes, you're correct. You're on the right path. It's intended to make you disagree with it. It's intended for it to break your brain a little bit and make you feel like this is nuts. God, how devious that they would think to divide us. And then they use, like you said, the Orwellian backwards term, social distancing, because what says social like distance, you know what I mean? So they're pathological.
And the liberation process is instant most of the time. The indoctrination process, I mean, think about how much work they put into making sure that we don't think for ourselves. I mean, they go through a lot of, because I think they know that the human spirit is so powerful and dynamic. And it's, you know, what they're trying to do is antithetical to our nature. So they can try to indoctrinate us for decades through schooling, through programming from TV, through poison food, poison water, a toxic world, and yet we can still wake up from it, you know?
Yeah.
And the liberation process is fast. So I went through, you know, I went through 21 years of school. I have a master's degree. I was like really into the system and I still saw through it. It didn't work on me ultimately. And people, once that seed is planted, once that crack in the windshield appears, it starts to shatter immediately. And I think that's really hopeful.
Yeah.
You know, I think that we will see, first of all, the awakening, whatever you want to call it. I'm actually not loving those terms these days, awakening, waking up. But whatever's happened, I think that people, the awareness that is increasing, I've seen it increase a lot in the time that I've been going on this ride. And this is one of the reasons why they're pushing the censorship so hard, which is why they're trying as hard as they can to stifle us, because people are seeing through it everywhere. And there's no stereotype for a person who seeks truth. That's one of the beautiful things about all these conferences you and I have attended, that the people, there's of all walks of life, all over the world, of all ages, of all different backgrounds, and yet we all have one thing in common, and that's a pursuit of truth and recognition of slavery. And it's undeniable. And I think we will win ultimately.
Yeah. When we go to these conferences, I'm always sort of impressed and still a bit surprised at the age range of people, you know, people in their early 20s and their late 70s and in everything in between. And I just keep expecting to see a certain demographic. And what I'm finding is that this concept of freedom is universally loved by all sorts of colors, age ranges, socioeconomic demographics. You know, we've seen a lot of Australians at Anarchapulco, a ton of them, because they're interested in this sorts of things. So it's the one thing that brings us all together. Well, two things that bring us all together as human beings is we love this idea of coming together for freedom, and we need the ability to express ourselves to one another in an effective and enthusiastic and authentic way. And so it's never been more necessary to improve your communication skills, to be aware of what's going on, to settle yourself and not argue with idiots online, even though it's very tempting to. And
you can't win an argument. That's very important. You cannot win an argument. Even if you win, you don't win. More on that later. Sign up for the course. But yeah, that's really important. Avoid arguments at all costs.
Well, speaking of that, where can people find the course? Where can people check this out and get more information about it?
Sure. Go to bennywills.com. And then click where it says parhesia. Like I said, parhesia is a forgotten word, but it means literally means freedom of speech. P-A-R-R-H-E-S-I-A, parhesia. It's on my website, bennywills.com, or just email me directly, benny@bennywills.com. It's Wills. It's not Willis. It's Wills. One I, Wills. But benny@bennywills.com or bennywills.com. And you can find me. I respond to every email I get. And if you're interested, just learn about the course, look into it, and then see. And then we can talk about it if you're apprehensive or have questions. It's not like I'm accepting everybody either. There's a limited amount of people that I can work with, so yeah. It's not just a money grab. This is a way to empower those people who want to invest in the time that I can spend with them. And we're about half capacity right now for the first season. So if you're interested, let's talk now, because I'm going to be getting started soon. And of course, you can be in future seasons as well. But for this first one, it's about half capacity. As soon as I get to about 25 to 30 people, I have to cap it. And then the only level that you can join at that point is like the observer level, which is fine. But if you want to be in the course, sign up soon. And if you have questions, let me know. But that's how you can find it. BennyWills.com, Benny@BennyWills.com to email. And I hope to hear from you.
Yeah, this is paramount. This is something that people need to check out. It's hard to quantify improvements in your communication skills, but they'll benefit you for the rest of your life. It's literally an investment in yourself. I'm a geek for this stuff, of course, because of my relationship with communication programs that we do. So I'm not just like, you know, a cheerleader for it. Like I've watched it with my own eyes. I've watched it change people's lives. After that Carmelo particular example that I talked about, these agents are like, we're going to gym. We got to do the Jim Rohn show in 2 hours. You know, will you guys come with us? And we're like, okay, we're in now. They saw with their own eyes the changes that could make on somebody in just a couple of minutes. And so, you know, I've known Benny for a little while now, and he's a fantastic human being. He's a great guy. He's a professional at this. This is not some dude who just, you know, decided he's going to throw up a website and maybe do this. This is a serious endeavor from somebody that is a serious person, but fun at the same time. So I don't want to make it sound like you're going to be like, it's going to be like that Pink Floyd video where you're the teacher there and like putting everybody in the meat grinder and trying to turn them into the same person. This is a class that people should really take some time to check out, see if it's a good fit for them. And hey, listen, it might not be a fit for everybody, but for those that are ready, I highly recommend.
And let me also just add that there are three tiers. I kind of mentioned it a second ago, but first tier is just the observation, like the voyeur. I call it the wallflower tier. So if you just want to observe, there's limitless availability for that.
Cool.
Unlimited spaces available to observe. There's about 25 to 30 for the middle and advanced tier. The advanced tier is only advanced because I work one-on-one with you every week. So there's like a lot of one-on-one, and I can help you with whatever you need help with, whether it's conversation or it's figuring out, like I'm working with a guy now to figure out what he's got a lot to offer, but he wants to focus on one thing so that he can bring that out rather than having his focus split over all these different areas. And I want to help him find what's the strongest that he can really, you know, lean into. And so we're working one-on-one together. And so that there's that. And if you sign up for that lower tier, you can upgrade at any time and then come up. If you like what you're seeing and you want to be in the class, pay the difference and you're in the class. If not this first season, then the following season. So yeah, I'm really stoked about it. And last thing I want to say about it, what you just said made me think of it. Constructive criticism is necessary to becoming a person in front of a crowd or a person who presents themselves publicly in any way. And I do it with humor and kindness, but I do it firmly to help you see that, you know, I think that we live in a culture that celebrates like you did it. Good job. And you stop there. Mm-hmm. So like someone's just going on stage and giving a speech. We're trained to be like, they did it. Great. Without saying that was great. And if we just highlight this one thing you did here, and if we change it just a little bit, emphasize this, maybe forget about this, now do it. Everyone's going to go, whoa, that's an amazing adjustment and improvement that wouldn't have happened if you hadn't had the, you know, the courage to actually call it out. We live in like a safety gloves, or what's the right term? Like a, I don't know. Yeah. Everything's like so safe. Like, well, they did it. They conquered the fear. Okay. That's step one. Now let's work with it and make it something awesome that people will remember, with subtle adjustments, like throwing Carmelo Anthony the basketball. Like that's a subtle adjustment that brought out exactly what was needed.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's important, and yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I highly recommend this for people to check out. That's Benny Wills. You can find him at bennywills.com. It's not Willis, it's Wills. Check it out.
That's very important. Even at Anarchapulco in the program, it said MC Benny Willis. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
you know, that's
perfect. It happens.
What do you want? Yeah. Well, everybody, listen, since we were speaking of algorithms, nobody at Google or Apple or YouTube or wherever is going to throw this video into the algorithm and help it become popular. So it's going to be up to the viewers to share it with people and friends and family that you think might benefit from it. Benny, you are the best. As you might not have heard that today, but here, I'm here to tell you, you're the best.
Takes one to know one, Charlie.
You're such a good dude. I think this program is so needed these days. Oh my God, it's the perfect timing. And 2020 has been pretty shitty for a lot of people, but you know what's come out of it? Some great things. You've got a new baby. You've got a great communication program, and I hope that people take the time to go check it out and see if it's a good fit for them. Thanks, Benny. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thank you, Charlie.